Adults in Ohio can legally use marijuana for medical or recreational purposes, and medical marijuana is legal in Kentucky, too. But what are the health risks of using marijuana products, even if they're purchased legally? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss what's been found in legal weed across the country and why states are struggling to regulate what's in it are senior contributors to UnDark, Teresa Carr, senior investigative reporter and editor at the Denver Gazette, Chris Osher, and still with us from the first half of our program, Yana Herdninova, the administrative director of the Drug Enforcement and Policy Center at Ohio State University's Moritz College of Law. Thank you all so much for being with us today. Yana, what kind of contaminants do labs typically test for when they're testing marijuana?
Sure. So according to Ohio statute, according to Ohio regulations, Ohio labs have to test for five things that would be considered contaminants, which is microbial contaminants. So mold, yeast, anything kind of that nature, bacteria. They would also have to test for mycotoxins, heavy metals, pesticides and fertilizer residue, and then also residual solvents if the product is extracted from the plant. So if it's not, in the plant naturally, so to speak. So those are the contaminant safety testing. Then they also have to test for the cannabinoid profile, as well as the terpenes, which is optional, but pretty common, just so users know what they are getting in terms of, the scent and potential therapeutic effects. And then also for moisture content and water activity. So that really is, to prevent mold growth in the product.
Okay. And Teresa, how does cannabis become contaminated? Yana mentioned fertilizers, and I guess that's, obvious to a lot of us. But what are some of the ways these other contaminants can get into cannabis?
Well, cannabis, and thank you for having me, by the way, the contaminants can really get into the plant any place along, from seed to shelf. One of the most obvious ways we think about this is where the plant is grown. So cannabis is what's known as a hyperaccumulator. It grows very fast and it kind of greedily sucks up water and nutrients. And along with that, it can suck up pesticides, heavy metals, and other toxins from the environment. One thing that I thought was very interesting, it was used, an industrial form of hemp was used to clean up environmental waste, particularly around Chernobyl. So it is it has a positive benefit in that respect as well. So what could happen is growers operate on small margins, so they could, wind up using a pesticide or a fertilizer like kelp because they really need that crop to make it. But, it could be contaminated at other points along the trail as well. So it might gather mold in storage. Or, it might get contaminated with heavy metals from a cheap vaping device.
Mm. Chris, what are some of the most common contaminants that you see, and what do we know about the health implications of those?
Well, here in Colorado, they have a testing regimen here, but there have been problems related to the fact that manufacturers are the ones that submit the samples to testing labs, as opposed to testing lab personnel actually selecting the samples. And that's been at times been manipulated. And so we have seen contaminants get through under that system, and health and safety recalls are issued sometimes a year late, telling people you should, destroy product you bought a year ago, which would already be consumed. So that has resulted in both pesticides that are banned showing up in product. We have had issues related to synthesized hemp becoming an imposter product in dispensaries, And the chemical synthesis use very high potent toxic chemicals, and residues of those chemicals have showed up. For instance, there was a contamination with methylene chloride, which is a solvent that is, can cause cancer and is so powerful that it's used to strip paint from rocket ships.
Wow. So Chris, I know you reported that hemp-derived products can be more dangerous than marijuana. Is that why? Because of these chemicals that are used for this synthesis?
That's what regulators and researchers worry about, is that hemp has very low levels of naturally occurring THC, but high levels of CBD. And what hemp manufacturers have learned is that you can, with chemical applications, turn that CBD into THC, but they require very potent chemicals to do so. In fact, in one instance, when this first showed up in the regulated marijuana market involving a company called Mile High Distributing, which was making distillate that would be used to make vapes and gummies and other edibles, they were using chemicals so powerful that when the fire department looked at their operation, they found that the chemicals were so powerful that if they had combusted, they would have covered 2 miles of a residential area of Denver with toxic gas that could have been deadly.
Wow. We are talking about what's been found in legal weed across the country and why states struggle to regulate what's in it. You can join the conversation. Call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Teresa, with everything we've just been talking about, is the legal market still safer than the illicit market?
Oh, definitely. The illicit market doesn't have any testing. And in every state, there's some testing infrastructure for the legal market. So there's that. And several of the experts I talk with are concerned because products that fail testing in the legal market sometimes get channeled into the illicit market. So even though it's not perfect, the legal market is far better in terms of quality and safety than the illicit market.
Yana, if people are listening to this right now and they use marijuana and they think, oh gosh, I want to know what's in mine, is there a way that consumers can do independent testing or send it to a lab in Ohio to find out what's in the marijuana they're using?
Yeah, unfortunately, Ohio is one of the 5 states out of the 25 that allow, home grow, for instance, that does not allow for private testing of products. So whether you purchase a product at a dispensary and you want to make sure that it's safe, or you have grown your own marijuana in your home, there's really no way for an Ohioan to request a private lab to test their product for them.
Huh. Okay. Well, let's also talk about potency. Teresa, how is it that legal marijuana can be mislabeled in terms of its potency? How do products end up with these kind of inflated levels of THC advertised on them on dispensary shelves?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And it's really one of the key questions that led me down this path of investigation for undocked.org. How do products that are on the shelves that have been tested and gone through fairly extensive testing not be what they say they are or contain contaminants? And when you think about it, labs are really the gatekeeper, right? And there is a financial incentive. The higher THC level, the more profitable, or the higher price and more profitable a product is. So the way that contaminated or mislabeled products wind up on the shelves is when a lab provides inaccurate results. Now, that could be because their calibration is off. There's something, it's an inadvertent mistake, but it also, happens oftentimes on purpose. So they provide a higher level of THC on the package, and it goes on and it gets sold for a higher price.
Does it ever go the other way where a lab thinks, oh, there's this much THC in it and there's actually a whole lot more?
I am not aware of that on a systemic level. And I don't think there would be a big incentive for that. Again, this is where the growers are paying the labs to test their products. And the growers, who oftentimes are under intense financial pressure, by the way, need to get as much profit as they can from that product. And for whatever reason, right now in the marketplace, higher THC products sell for more. So the incentive is really there if they're going to provide fraudulent results to say that it contains more THC than it actually does.
Jana, can you explain how labs test for potency, what kind of potency they test for when they're doing that?
I am not a chemist, unfortunately. I do not have the information on how they go about it. I would assume they would test for THC, Delta-9 THC at the moment, and then for different cannabinoids. But unfortunately, I do not know how the chemical process works in that.
Fair enough. You can't be everything. So I totally understand. Chris, can you tell us more about what you found in your reporting about how samples are chosen for testing? You and Teresa both have talked about how the producers, the growers, are the ones sending the product off. How does that work?
Well, in Colorado, again, it's the manufacturer who is gathering the samples of their own product and submitting that to a testing lab. And we have found instances where, you know, what is going out to dispensaries into the market is not representative of what is going to a testing lab. And there's a powerful profit motive here in Colorado. So a distillate of, you know, a kilogram of distillate manufactured for marijuana costs about $2,500. You can make distillate from hemp CBD isolate for about $225. So there's a powerful incentive to use this hemp product that is used or manufactured through chemical synthesis and might have some of these byproduct residues. And in one notorious case, there were vape cartridges that were found to have methylene chloride in them, which again has been shown to cause cancer. And eventually, after regulators investigated, they did determine that it was a hemp imposter product. Because of this chemical synthesis and the chemical residues that can occur, that chemical synthesis process is banned in Colorado. But because of this testing procedure that allows manufacturers, it keeps on showing up in dispensaries.
And Teresa, you found that this isn't just a problem in Colorado, right? I mean, in a lot of states, producers are the ones paying the labs. What have you seen similar problems play out in other places?
Oh, definitely. One of the things I wanted to do with this investigation is kind of poke my head up and look, because there had been some wonderful regional investigations like that of, you know, Chris. But to say, is this a national problem? And what are the common drivers? And one of the things, and I think we've alluded to it already, but one of the things is lab shopping, right? So once you find, or the industry finds, that a lab is providing favorable results, they tend to, you know, flock to that lab. And, you know, I think with our investigation for undoc.org, we really showed that very graphically. You know, I obtained records from several states, from Oregon, Maryland, and Massachusetts, several years worth of testing data. And then we had some great data journalists, Alezu Bozic and Paula Wierlinska, did this, you know, intense data analysis, and we looked for trends. And what we saw was this, you know, vividly this phenomenon of lab shopping. So if you take Oregon, for example, You know, there was this one lab that we could see it was consistently providing higher THC. And we could show over time how they gained market share. So they started with like 2%, testing 2% of the products in the market. To at one point, they were testing more than any other lab. And then we could also show that 4 out of 5 of the producers switched to that lab and saw their THC levels rise.
Yeah, we definitely saw something similar here. In which we did an analysis and we could show anomalies in how testing was showing up for impurities, and that there was just an anomalous spike right below the threshold that would be the cutoff that looked like certain labs were manipulating the results. And we even had one situation similar to what she's describing, where there was a lab that was getting more and more market share. Some of the labs that were known for honesty were losing and even went out of business. And meanwhile, this lab kept on having very high potency results, had some strange results around contaminants. Took years, but eventually the state did shut that lab down, finding that they were manipulating the results.
Yana, why aren't lab testing requirements more standardized across the U.S. or even within states? Does that have something to do with the fact that marijuana is illegal at the federal level?
I think that's exactly it, because marijuana is illegal at the federal level. Each state is sort of on their own in terms of developing regulations, whether it's for labs or for growers or for processors. I do want to point out, you know, I think there are some things that legislators and regulators have tried to do, such as, you know, prohibiting vertical integration of labs and growers or processors. So you cannot have a financial stake in a lab if you're also a marijuana grower or marijuana processor. It doesn't eliminate the concerns that Theresa and Chris were talking about, but there's definitely an understanding that, you know, the police should be separate from the grower, so to speak. And I think, you know, at least according to some of the information from the Division of Cannabis Control in Ohio, I think they're aware of some of these problems that Theresa and Chris mentioned. And it seems like they are in the process of doing some initiatives to improve performance in terms of data accuracy and lab results accuracy. So there might be something to, you know, to discuss with the Division of Cannabis to see how much they're doing presently to address the issues.
Yeah. Chris, what did you hear from producers about the cost of getting an accurate test versus paying for just a passing test?
Well, they said, you know, that it's very easy to just pass the test, that you can go to a lab and they'll give you a passing result, but it's very difficult to really get an understanding of what's in your product, given the lab variability and giving a lack of standards here in the state of Colorado.
Theresa, please go ahead.
I was going to say, I can add to that. I was talking to one grower in Oklahoma, and he told me, frankly, he would roll 3 joints and send them to 3 labs and find out who gave him the best results. And then he would send all of his products to the most favorable lab.
And I would like to add to that, in the state of Ohio, it is the lab staff that goes to the processors and the growers and selects the samples. So it might not be as easy to subvert, maybe, as in other states. Yeah. So just a note on that.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Yana. Theresa, what about quality assurance labs? What are those, and how do they monitor licensed testing labs?
Well, I think for just a little bit of background, you have to kind of consider for all these states as they came online with these regulatory bodies, it, you know, oftentimes it was almost overnight, you know, so products would be legalized. And again, this is not legal at the federal level. So there are not federal guidelines and standards as there might be for, let's say, food products. And so states had to like kind of invent this regulatory structure overnight and then start testing. A lot of times they didn't have the budget, they didn't have the testing infrastructure, they didn't have the wherewithal to do all that testing themselves. So that's where we got this process of state licensing, you know, independent testing labs. So, you know, the idea that, you know, that the states could test all this was just not possible. But as with the maturity of time, a lot of states are now developing their own quality assurance labs, and then they can do more things like secret shopper testing, buying things off the shelves and testing for contaminants. They can go and do round robin testing of labs where they send a standardized sample and find, you know, if all the labs give, you know, the same results, or if some labs are outliers. They can work with labs, because sometimes this is inadvertent. There are different things that can affect the THC level, moisture content in the product, for example. There are all these kind of things. So, you know, these quality assurance labs we see as a trend coming online in several states.
Yana, you mentioned earlier that Ohio does not have the ability for home growers or, you know, consumers of recreational marijuana to send. They don't have labs that you can just send it to independently on your own. So what, if anything, can consumers do to feel confident that they're buying legal cannabis that isn't contaminated in some way?
Well, I besides potentially sending it to a lab outside of Ohio, which I'm not sure whether that would be legal, because it would be sending something across state lines, which is not allowed. I don't know if there is much you can do unless you are a super chemist and you can run the test yourself. However, I would like to point out, you know, we do an annual survey of medical marijuana patients, and we always ask them about, you know, various things, including whether they are confident in the security and safety of the product. And I believe it was 88% of people who expressed, you know, strong agreement with a statement that they are confident. So I don't know whether we have seen, you know, cases like Teresa and Chris mentioned from Colorado or Oklahoma. I don't know if that has really been the case in the state of Ohio so far.
Chris, are there things that folks in Denver can do if they want to make sure that what they're using is okay?
I mean, you really can't take it and submit it to the lab. So what you would probably have to do is, you know, find a manufacturer that you trust, that has a good reputation, and maybe rely on that, you know, trust factor.
Yeah.
You know, I would second that. This is Teresa, because I talked to growers who were so scrupulous and cared so much about their customers, many of whom were medical marijuana users. So I'd say, you know, you can get to know your grower. You know, this is something that can be known. A lot of times these are small operators. And if you really, really are concerned about that quality, talk to the growers.
Okay. Well, I've been talking with senior contributor to UnDark, Teresa Carr, senior investigative reporter and editor at the Denver Gazette, Chris Osher, and Yana Herdninova, the administrative director of the Drug Enforcement and Policy Center at Ohio State University's Moritz College of Law. Thank you all so much for your time today and for this fascinating conversation. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez Cornu. If you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thanks for listening.